Channel. This is a Class 1 emergency. All civilian traffic is barred from streets and highways. Stay in your homes. Stay in your homes.
Live from the Hoopin' Brooklyn studio in Thoppletown, USA, it's Necro, and I'm a par with your host, Mike Stoffel and Mike McCullough, episode 124, Are Our Lions Echo of a Curse? The story of a man who falls in love with a woman, who falls in love with another man, who has a baby and nobody loves it. And now, Necro, I'm a par,
military orders are subject to summary execution. Stay in your homes. Repeat, Comrade Channel. This is a Class 1 emergency. All civilian traffic is barred from streets and highways.
Quick, name the three main characters.
Oh my God.
Vic,
Tom, and
Mary.
Of course her name is Mary.
And what's the daughter's name?
The daughter's name is Mary. Somebody's daughter. Again, I have to apologize. We had to pass this book back and forth, and
we'll never do that again.
So it's been a while since,
especially because we're podcasting at night and we're sundowning right now.
Yes, pretty much. So here we are. We're our third and final R.R. Ryan book.
Apparently, this is his, her,
The best one. I would hesitate to call it a masterpiece, but it's there's a couple things come together.
What an unholy mess!
It kind of held together better than some of the other ones for me.
Well, since nobody is going to read this, should we just run through the plot really quick?
As best we can, sure. So, this book was published during the war in England. And so it starts back during the World War I, where there is a young man who goes off to war, and rather than ask the love of his life to marry him before he goes to the trenches.
That's Tom.
He demurs, saying it wouldn't be fair for her to say yes to a corpse.
And that's Mary.
That's Mary.
Well, Mary's not a corpse, but...
No, yeah. But he's thinking, you know, it's not fair to tie somebody down if she's just going to... become a widow in 6 months.
Correct.
So,
and Tom has means.
Tom has means, and he's an honorable guy. So he's in the war, he's in the trenches, and he becomes boon companions with another man named Vic, who has a bit of a drinking problem, but is fun to be around, and he invites Vic back home. Otherwise, he wouldn't be
there. He has idiosyncratic alcohol. Amnesia or something.
Yeah, I forget something like
the name
that.
Of it. But.
Yeah. But he ends up inviting him back home on leave. And he seduces Mary, immediately falls
because
for him.
He was fawn-like.
He was fawn-like, yes. And so before their furlough is over, they're married.
They're fucked and married.
Yeah, exactly. And she's probably pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Tom, he snossed, he lost.
He bears it well.
He bears it well as best he can.
The war's ended. And then Vic immediately becomes a wife abuser.
Yeah, immediately.
Horrible, immediately.
Horrible wife.
Sticking pins in her shoulders.
Oh, it's terrible. It was pretty rough.
And you could see the abuse was there before because Tom saw it. And he also saw him like gorging on the blood of a corpse.
Right.
Like reveling in the blood.
Yeah.
And
yeah. So something's not right with this Vic fella.
Vic is not right. But people are just drawn to him.
Yeah. He's very charismatic. And Mary finds we find themselves in this weird triangle situation. So Vic is abusing Mary. Mary does eventually turn to Tom for help.
Who comes back from the war eventually
and
makes it right.
Makes
him promise not to ever hurt her again, but they have to live separate lives in the house.
Yeah, exactly.
But she's pregnant and has a baby.
Yeah, and she has the child. Unbeknownst to her, there's this weird sort of setup where they're able to substitute her.
Vic is fucking a nurse. Who has a sister
who's
also pregnant but doesn't want the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And so then Mary has the babies, but they're twins. And one is awful, and one is just angelic, normal.
Yeah.
So he switches out the awful baby for the baby of the nurse's sister.
Yeah, who coincidentally...
Don.
Yeah, Don.
Who we don't ever know his name until, like, way... like, oh, yes, there's a boy. His name is Don.
He's nondescript.
And then, also, while this is going on, there's also this escaped freak from the circus or the zoo or something.
Called the...
Inscrutable.
The Inscrutable.
And it's like a beastly man that is killing girls and...
Yeah, just tearing beating, people apart. And
it's like a beast, and it turns out it's Vic's father.
It's Vic's father. Right. So...
So Vic dispatches with the father. Vic kills the father.
Yes. Vic. Then,
So then fast forward.
Time passes.
20 years.
Now the kids, these two kids, one Mary and Vic's natural child, one a changeling, a substitute baby.
And then Don.
So the other baby is out of the picture.
Vin. It's not Vic. It's Vin.
Vin. Vin, of course, Vincent.
And it's not Tom, it's Terry.
Oh, we do apologize. We do the best we can with the limited funds we have, which is zero. And the limited fucks we give, which are one, maybe two.
All right, so keep going.
Anyway.
Keep going.
So 20 years have passed. The children are grown. Don is a workaday sort of
he's a mercantile.
He's a salary man. And the daughter is this lovely little thing who is the apple of Vin's eye. He loves her and keeps her under his control. Not that she feels particularly controlled. And then a strange man moves into town, a man with wears heavy glasses and a scarf. And covers his face. He says he's a burn victim. Of course.
And gloves.
Of course, this is the actual son, the one that was switched out at birth.
Who was raised by the nurse
and
her father in a circus or something.
Yeah, in a circus. And he kills... He kills them both.
He kills
the mother, and then the father comes to warn them, and then he kills... the father as well.
Exactly.
And manages to essentially kidnap his sister.
Whose name is Faith.
And what is the working out here?
Well, he cuts a deal. He says, I'm going to kill my mother for cursing me. How he knew he was cursed.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the mother's fault.
No.
His father is some kind of being. They're both some sort of beings that can...
Yeah.
Kind of hypnotize people to see them not as they are.
Not as they are, right.
But they're creatures of some sort. They're, who knows what they are. Because the father made some deal with a demon or something and became like this thing.
Yeah, they're very strict. We'll talk about
that. We don't really know. So he makes a deal. He's like, I'm going to kill my mother Mary for cursing me. And I'm going to kill, and I'm going to keep my sister for my own. And, which is weird. And then, Vin says, fine, well, you can do that. Meanwhile, Terry's been hit on the head and's in the hospital, so he can't do anything.
Yeah.
So, also, Terry has moved into the house. He lives next door to Mary and Vin.
Yes.
He's moved into the house as a boarder and paying rent.
Yeah.
And his house is empty.
It's empty, yes.
So he kidnaps Faith. They're actually in Terry's house in the basement.
Yeah.
He makes this arrangement. Mary's going to come over to the house to see her daughter for one last time and sort of let herself be killed by her son
so that
Faith can go free.
Mm-hmm.
And then Vin comes over with her and he pulls a switcheroo and Faith and Mary escape and Vin burns the house down with he and his son. And that because
and
he loves star. His daughter.
Yes.
And he doesn't love Mary, but
yeah,
he's okay with her.
Yeah, he's.
But he says, "I don't like you. I don't really like you." But But she doesn't like him, but he's okay with her because she loves his daughter.
Yeah, he's the mother of his children.
And then that's it. And then Terry and Mary get married.
And they have
no children because her womb is dusty at this point, filled with demon babies and
dusty and webbed.
So that's the story.
That's the story. End of story. So I will say that the story actually was constructed more interestingly than the first two.
But it was completely unbelievable.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It was just a crazy, crazy melodrama. Somebody just pulling events out of their ass and trying to like write them into a story. With a little bit of fate involved and, you know, this love triangle, which you can usually get some good stuff going with that. And but as I was afraid was going to happen reading these three in a row, they would start what we were able to overlook in the first one.
And what was precious in the second one became vomitous in the third one.
And it's funny because Echo of the Curse, this one we just read, is probably, you know, objectively speaking, the best of the three novels that we read. But we were so jaded at this point by the flaws and the flaws in the writing and the just the creakiness of the plot and the characters in this one were the three main characters were more broad, broadly drawn than
that's true. We're really not in them the way we were in the first book.
Yeah, in the first book, because we were so hewing so closely to the woman, and then to a degree to her hero, the guy who comes to save her. But she was a real character. The characters in here, there's, you know, Terry is not Tom. Terry, is just a freaking doormat, and you kind of want to slap him around a little bit.
Mm-hmm. You do.
Vin, I did. Yeah. Vin is interesting, but he's inscrutable because you can never tell what he's thinking.
You're not in his head.
You can never really be in his head because it's just too alien. Mary is also kind of a doormat.
Never understood why, like, well, just leave him.
Yeah, just
or
leave
Vin
him.
Go. Because they were doing that back then.
Yeah, in the 40s.
Yeah.
Well, this book was in the 40s, but in the 20s, early 20s,
people got divorced.
I suppose, but you know, if I've learned anything from Downton Abbey, I'd probably.
But she wasn't upper class.
She wasn't. No,
they were middle class.
So. Well, yeah, middle class. Well, yeah. Well, she was from a doctor's family, and Terry was a lawyer.
Yeah, but Yeah. They weren't elite.
No, they weren't landed gentry or anything like that. But they had land. They owned their houses and stuff. Anyway.
Yeah, that part seemed really creaky, and I can't just give it a pass because it's 1930 or whatever it was, 1920. Like, yeah, he was abusive.
That kind of depiction of abuse, I think that was kind of rare up until then.
Depicted in literature, you mean?
In literature, you could hint at it. You could say that peasants would knock their wives around and stuff like that, or you would have trying to think of like another roughly contemporaneous book. Henry James, Portrait of a Lady, which is about an abusive marriage.
In Oliver, you twist, you get a sense that what's her face is beaten by
the lady,
the one,
yeah. What was her name? Anyway, but yes, but it's also kind of they look at it askance. But in this one, sticking pins in her,
and clocking her, strangling her, knocking her into the wall,
and like killing, like somebody gives her a puppy. And he kills the puppy, killing the dog.
And he mutilates the dog.
Mutilates the dog.
The dog's not dead yet.
Yeah, he just mutilates the dog. Not.
She's like, oh, a puppy. Cool. Ah, ah.
It was not very nice.
No. For no reason. Yeah. Like, it was just bizarre.
Pure cussedness.
And we don't really know what he is. Like, he does perform some sort of ritual and eats a squirrel or something. And
yeah,
then,
so let's talk about that. What exactly is
he?
So, when I've read about this book, he's like sort of a... He's qualities of the werewolf, qualities of a vampire, qualities of a shapeshifter of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
But that he has
some Wendigo, maybe?
A Wendigo, some sort of supernatural legacy.
A chimera?
Possibly.
A Pan?
Could be. You don't know. And the fact...
And they don't tell you, and they don't want to tell you.
Yeah, the fact that that the author doesn't really explain it, I appreciate that. I think that was a...
Yeah.
That was a good restraint on her or his part.
Maybe she didn't know. Maybe she didn't know either.
Yeah. You will notice that we are switching genders here. Should we talk about that?
Let's finish the yeah. about everything else.
Yeah. So the monster. So you don't really know. And people were talking about this. That this book was there's evidence in this book that the author had been influenced by Lovecraft. I didn't really get that.
No. I mean, maybe there's some other. Old one that he's sacrificing to, or he's drawing from some power because he keeps hinting to this power that he's drawing, going to draw from, and boy, you're going to rue the day when I draw from that power.
Yeah, possibly.
But we don't even really know what that is.
No,
he does perform some sort of ritual in the basement, right?
Yeah, because
he lives in the basement.
Yes,
it's a 1920s basement, not a nice 1970s basement.
The shag carpet on the floor and the walls. Super swanky.
And the cork on the walls and those smoky mirror tiles. with a foosball. Not a foosball table. One of those air hockey tables.
Air hockey table.
And an Atari.
And a vinyl bar in the corner and a hi-fi.
No, it was a 1920s skank basement.
With fruit jars.
And he draws a circle and he's laying in it and doesn't he eat a squirrel or something?
Something. I don't even remember.
He kills something and he gets a power of some sort.
Yeah.
We don't know. You don't really know.
So that kind of ambiguity and the willingness to let the mystery be. I appreciate it.
Even the inscrutable is a mystery. We really don't know what it is. It's killing people, and we kind of think Vin took care of it, but we're not 100% sure.
Yeah.
So, and then the son is... He's something. And they do have a power to mystify people. People see...
Yeah.
They kind of see the real thing, and then it's sort of like their eyes get clouded, and then it becomes...
Yeah, it's a power to cloud the mind,
it's kind of a
too.
Glamour.
And so this is, at this point, if whoever is writing this would have been aware of the radio serial, The Shadow. And The Shadow's power was the ability to cloud the mind. So there's a little flavor of that in there, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so...
The power to cloud man's minds. Only the shadow knows
what evil lies in the hearts of men.
Only the shadow knows. So, but this isn't really the shadow.
No, it's not. It's not. But it has a melodramatic feel, like almost of a radio, of a radio serial or of a B movie or a movie serial
or a Penny Dreadful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what these are. These books.
They weren't high art.
They weren't aspiring to be anything more than that. And the fact of the matter is that they are a little bit more than that.
But
not a lot.
No.
But a little bit more than that.
But here's the thing. Was it fun to read? To me, it was not fun to read.
To me, it actually was fun.
It was fun for you.
Yeah, and I kind of want to talk about that.
I thought the first book was more fun. Out of all the books, that was the most fun for me to read. This felt like... reading War and Peace Part 2, a slog through.
My experience of reading these three books in a row, I think, was very close to yours, which is the first one was really fun, the second one, not so much fun, and this last one was, frankly, a slog.
It was a slog. But you had fun reading the slog.
I did. When I got to the end, I was like, okay, here we go. We're at the end here now, and this is, things are happening, and we're finding out what we're going to find out. It's fine. But I wanted to talk about why I was attracted to, because these books are fucking obscure.
And I also,
nobody reads these books.
And while you're bringing that, I also wanted you to maybe address, because I can't, why that guy put them on three lists.
Exactly. That's the other point I want to make. Yes.
So,
yeah, so this is one of the things that I really enjoy doing, which is finding underread or unread books, or finding...
Well, that's our mission. That's the Necronomicon mission.
That is. It's something that I do with other things too, like with movies, with music. I love finding the forgotten and finding like gems in the forgotten, because there's so much out there, and people generate so much art, and only very little of it gets carried over.
Yeah, trickles to the surface.
Yeah. So I love finding things that nobody loves.
sort of like an inscrutable child.
That's
taken from its mother. Raised by circus people.
And you know, like reading it, and like maybe like it's like, you know, this is a weird little old book, but you know, like I recommend it. It's not great, but it's kind of awesome.
I'd say that for the first one.
Yeah, that
it's not great, but it's kind of awesome.
So that leads me into why Carl Edward Wagner put these books on that list. I think he loved doing that. He was
sort of saving it from obscurity.
Yeah, he's like, you know what? He was asked by, he was just for Twilight Zone magazine in 1980, 81, something like that. And he was asked by the editor of Twilight Zone magazine, T.E.D. Klein, to come up with a list of the best horror novels. Why did T.E.D. Klein ask him to do that? Well, Carl Edward Wagner was the editor at this time of the world's best, the year's best horror stories anthology from Dahl Books. So he was an established expert on this. And Carl Edward Wagner had written, he mostly wrote sword and sorcery fantasy, you know, like Conan's type things. Yeah, his big character was Kane. But he also wrote a lot of horror stories. Including one, I think we mentioned this a couple episodes ago, a story called Styx, which more than anything else in the world was the inspiration for the original Blair Witch Project. And it's a really great short story, and it's really scary. And he wrote a bunch of other like really, really good horror stories, very, very transgressive. He really cleared new ground. And his books are very collectible. They're hard to find because... You know, nobody keeps them in print except for boutique publishers who print 1,000 copies and, oh no, print 500 copies and sell them for $100 a piece.
Assholes.
Anyway, so Carl Edward Wagner, I think, was asked to make this list, and he said, well, I could just, you know, do the thing. I can put Dracula at number one and Frankenstein at number two and, you know, Invisible Man at number three and Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde at number four. He's like, I'm not going to do that. He did put on the list a couple of towering classics. Frankenstein is on that list.
Yeah, you'd have to.
You have to. Well, he didn't. He esteemed Frankenstein so much that I can't not put this on the list. But like Dracula's not on the list.
Yeah. Dracula's on a different list.
It's on a different list. And so he generated these three weird lists, and he populated them with the hopelessly obscure. I mean, books that...
Thinking that nobody would ever read them.
Thinking that no one would ever
read them. So they would never wonder why he put them on.
Yeah, he was just like... Carl Wagner was a... he was a profoundly... he was a man torn apart by bad, bad habits. He drank Jack Daniels like water, and smoked like a chimney. He was grossly overweight and blotchy, and
he drank water like Jack Daniels.
And he died young. He died young. He just drank himself to death, basically. I can just see him. He was a fixture at conventions, and I can just see him like talking with his people. It's like, you know what? I'm gonna do. Takes another pull off of the Jack Daniels. I'm gonna just like make this impossible list. Books that I've read that I really like, but they're just fucking weird, you know. I'm just gonna put this weird list out there, and he published it, and you know, set up.
So the tail wagged the dog.
Yeah, exactly. And set gullible nerds like me out looking for these fucking books. And a book that nobody would have bought. I mean, you could have bought it for a quarter at a garage sale in England if you were lucky to find it or thought to think of it, thought to look for it. And within 5 years, those books were going for $400 a piece, if you could find a copy. So
wow.
Dancing Totara Press puts, as much as they could, they've put most of those books in print. A bunch of other books on that list are from you can get from this publisher.
Oh.
So bless them. So I enjoyed reading these books because I like reading the obscure, but they're also, I have to admit, they're obscure also for a reason.
And what reason would that be?
They're not great.
Great.
They're not great. They're not as good as the books.
As the really good ones.
As the really good ones. The ones that have really earned their position in the canon.
It's like going to the Doppeltown art crawl.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of artists.
Yes.
There's a lot of artists.
So many
artists. There's only a few good artists. That's because it's hard to be good.
Yeah.
Like, everybody can be awful to mediocre.
Yeah, awful to mediocre. And they have the right to do that.
Absolutely. And
do it as much as they want.
But a really, really good is rare.
Yeah.
And that's for a reason.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's hard and it's rare. And to write a really good book is hard.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've read other books on his list that we haven't talked about. One I remember reading... a couple winters ago, it was a short little book and it had the fantastic title of, it was just called Hell, Said the Duchess.
the Duchess to the Bishop or what?
Something like that.
Oh, it's funny.
It's around here somewhere. I would probably lay my hands on it if I dug around. And there are other books on the list that I have not yet read that I still want to read. And I've had this experience over and over again. Like, you know what? This book is deservedly obscure, but in that whole big, iceberg of obscure of novels that deserve to be recognized.
Yeah.
And you have all the ones that are above the waterline and the ones on the very top. Yeah, that's where your Frankenstein, your Dracula, and those books are. These are like sort of just above the waterline. So, if you have the time and you're interested, they're worth reading.
It's part of our history.
Yeah.
It's part of our horror history.
Yeah, it's part of the forgotten history of horror. And it's real history. It's just not the history that gets written.
Right. So was there anything in this book that scared you? Did you ever feel scared or at least semi-anxious? Or
When I realized the predicament that Mary was in when she married this guy and was so completely blindsided by him, I just, that peril of the woman in distress... Having married the wrong guy. He was beating her. He was taking all of her money. He was keeping her away from the things that she loves. All those things. That was kind of it.
Hmm. Where I felt that?
Where?
It's like, I was really worried about Don.
Oh, poor Don.
Because I am not kidding. His name does not turn up until you're three quarters in. Because there's a son. They never mention him.
Yeah.
They just mentioned Faith.
Yeah.
And like, well, where's the other kid? And finally, when it's 20 years later, Don shows up. And I'm thinking, and Don's like getting a hint that something's not right here.
Something is awry.
Especially with this new tenant that has moved in. I'm thinking, Don's going to get it. And Don, poor Don.
For the love of God, somebody do something about Don.
And I felt nervous for him.
But he turns out okay.
Well, he's not even mentioned the rest of the book.
I mean, it doesn't
for such a small house.
Who's that guy that was here?
And
it's your brother. Oh, right, Don. I remember that guy.
And when Terry gets hit in the, he gets taken out. I was a little worried for him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is he gonna die? Well, that's awful.
That's right. That was right.
I wasn't scared. I was more like worried for him, but. Yeah. I think the what's going to happen to Don had me a little anxious. So it surprised me.
Well,
I felt for him.
if you have a flaw, Mike, it's it's that you feel too much.
I feel too much for the wrong people. There we go.
There we go. That is what we have learned today.
Well, I think given all that, you know what time it is?
It is cocktail time. Yeah.
All right.
Well, here we are at cocktail time.
Mm-hmm.
So, what are we drinking?
Well,
it's very fancy. It's all there's bubbles. The bubbles are going up my nose.
Well, it's champagne. It's a champagne cocktail.
So we were just talking about poor Don. But we didn't forget Don.
I did not forget Don.
This drink is for Don. Here's how you make this drink for Don.
You get two shots. You get a shaker.
Get a shaker.
Two shots of gin.
Yeah, some good English gin.
A tablespoon of golden syrup. Now, if you don't know what golden syrup is.
I do not know what golden syrup is.
Okay, it's a British thing. You can get it now in the stores. It's a cane sugar syrup. It's sort of analogous to Karo syrup, but it tastes better. It has a vanilla.
Sure.
And
ooh, that sounds good.
Yeah, it's not bland like Karo syrup. It's,
yeah, I can taste the vanilla a little bit here when the bubbles aren't going down my nose.
And then a half of a lemon squeeze. Take the seeds out, please.
Yes.
Into the shaker with some ice.
Yep, shake that up good and vigorously. And then put that into two champagne flutes. And then open a bottle of not your best champagne.
Yeah, you don't need that.
You don't need just like guess Prosecco or champagne or some kind of sparkling white wine. And fill the glass and give it a little gentle stir. Yep. And then garnish it with a lemon twist. And what are we calling this?
Don Grow a Pear Anon.
Don Grow a Pear Anon.
Don Grow a Pear Anon.
See what we did there? Because it's not Don Perignon, it's
Don Grow a Pear Anon.
So
listen, the drink is better than
its name. So we do apologize, but not very vigorously.
Here's to Don.
Here's to Don.
Chin chin. All right, the drink is done. Let's head on down to the basement for a new offer. And here we are in the basement.
This is always like kind of epic because we only do this every three episodes. To pick the next three episodes. It's quite a commitment. It's like buying a car.
I know. But we do go to the basement every time.
Absolutely.
It's all pro forma. Well,
so
after much arm wrestling and thumb wrestling and coin tossing, and we have decided to read the author,
Cormac McCarthy.
So I never really thought of him as a horror author because I think of that Western series so much more than anything.
Yeah, all the pretty horses, all the pretty horses. And crossing and the cities of the plain. But he is an author of the extreme. So I think anybody would agree that's what he writes about, like extreme situations and characters. And so we're going to read three Cormac McCarthy novels as if they were horror novels. We're going to do an early one, a middle one, and a late one.
Uh-huh. And the early one, the
first one, we're going to do from 1968, we're going to do The Outer Dark.
By Cormac McCarthy. And then the middle one is?
We're going to do Blood Meridian, which was his big breakout novel.
And there was a movie of that too, isn't there?
I don't think so.
I feel like there was.
But... I mean, there's movies that are inspired by it, you know, with horrible things happening.
Okay.
Cowboys.
And that was written in the 80s, right?
Yeah, 85 was published. And then we will finish with The Road, his latest novel. Apparently he's got a new one coming out sometime. Who knows? But The Road, his post-apocalyptic novel.
Yeah. Which we have both read, but
I'll read it again.
I would like to read it again.
I'll read it again, yeah. So kind of chuffed about that. I think that'll be kind of fun.
I know. I feel like it will be a better...
Yeah, there'll be more meat, and I think the experience of reading these will be a little more challenging.
Well, I just read War and Peace, so
yeah, you're good. It's all downhill for you now.
If you can get through the epilogue of War and Peace, God love ya.
Well, good for you. You are in the elite. You have read Ulysses and War and Peace.
Yeah, I feel like something.
You are something.
Finally worth something.
You are
See,
finally
Dad. All right, let's get out of this basement.
God bless.
Well, we're out of the basement, but we're not out of the basement of my soul.
But we're not out of the woods yet. So what's anything else about R.R. Ryan or Echo of a Curse?
Well, here's the thing. We were using the him or her. We're not really sure now because some parts of the books are saying that we've been reading. They're like, well, Evelyn is the person's name, but it's a man.
Yeah, Evelyn Bradley is a man. So
there's a website that's completely devoted to this person.
I know, but it hasn't been updated for over 10 years.
But there was also, they also did they were finding other people in the family tree.
Yeah,
on that website.
So there are people who say, there was this gentleman named Evelyn Bradley who was a playwright who may or may not have written these books.
And he had a lot of nom de plumes. He wrote a lot of other books under other names.
But he also had a daughter who also may have written these books. Or they may have written them together. We don't know.
We just don't know.
We just don't know.
I don't know. Maybe somebody knows. I don't know. Yeah. You don't know.
And my ability to care is diminishing
completely.
So we're gonna live with the mystery. We're gonna do the artistic make the artistic choice here and live with the mystery.
Yeah, I really would like to think that it's a man with a girl's name, and I'm happy with that. That pleases me to no end.
Oh, that's all good.
Right, Vivian? Right. That's another one.
Vivian, Carol, and Evelyn all agree, as does Kim.
So my only little horror thing that I want to throw out there,
not
about this book, is I've been reading this, I guess it's not really a graphic novel, but the Archie Comics. Mm-hmm. They've been doing lots of crazy shit lately.
In the comics? Yeah.
In the comics, well, it has a crazy-ass show, which I adore, and it's dark. It's called Riverdale, and there's a segment of Archie Comics. They're a dark series. Like, Archie is dead and comes back to life. There's a whole series. Well, there's a Sabrina series called The Adventures of Sabrina, and it's freaking dark. So it takes the tropes of the 70s comic, and even a little bit of the TV show, but it's messed up.
Really?
And dark, and...
That was surprising.
So it's good, and it's good.
It's good. All right, well...
So the comic would come out however they... I don't know whether they come out every month or something.
Monthly, yeah.
So there's two collections now. There's the first 1 through 6, and then 7 through whatever, so... I think that one finishes a story arc, but it's good. It's really good. The witches are like, they're cannibals and they're
good heavens.
And hail Satan and all that stuff. So
that is very surprising. That is not the Riverdale I remember.
And Betty and Veronica are witches in Riverdale. Sabrina lives in a different town, so she's not.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if I have any recommendations for things, and I don't know that I do.
Well, good. I finally have something up on you.
I mean, I'm consuming lots of words and audio, but nothing's jumping to mind right now.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Well, we can end it right there.
Let's do it.
So what should we do with this thing? First, we have to stick a lot of pins in it.
A lot of pins in it, and then lock it down in the basement. And set the house on fire.
I love it. Goodbye, R.R. Evelyn Ryan.
R.R. Evelyn Ryan, Casey, and whoever you are, we hardly knew ye.
All right.
Bye. What you got in the bank, can I have it? Put it down, turn around, and forget it. Hope to die and cross my heart. Hope to die and cross my heart. See my name and it echoes in the alley. Fall asleep in the arms of your baby. I was yours right from the start. I was yours right from the start. Hope to die and cross my heart. Hope to die and cross my heart.
broken hearts and broken bones. Spent that summer all alone. What's the difference? I know you're waiting for me. What's your name? I forgot when you told me. You were something pretty, something right out of the movie. Disappear. Broken hearts and broken bones.